walking around the arts old tree.
You started strong and rapidly ran out of gas on that one, didn't you?
Welcome to the Arts Hole, a Christmas Arts Hole.
Christmas Arts Hole.
My name is Bea Roberts. I'm a scriptwriter and a script doctor and a Grinch. And with me, I have Mr. Luke Haynes, a jolly old soul.
Are you saying you're the Grinch in this relationship? Jesus. What does that make me?
I am when it comes to Christmas.
Okay, that's fair. Yes, apologies for any crackling in the background, by the way. It is Baltic at the moment, so we've got the fire going.
We do.
So there is a small fire happening in the room with us. It's mostly deliberate.
There's also a small dog happening in the room with us, but she is sleeping nicely in
She's
the corner.
Doing very well. Good girl, this girl. So...
This is the show where we take apart pieces of art and see if we can put them back together again. Now, I must admit, we've been a little bit light on fixes of late because a lot of the stuff we've watched has been terrible.
Yeah.
However, this one, I think, fixable.
Yeah, you were very enthusiastic about having notes on this and not just in a disparaging way. And I'd never actually seen it because, God, why would you? But yeah, we're.
What else were you doing in 1996?
Puberty. So yeah, we are talking about Jingle All the Way, the
Schwarzenegger Christmas vehicle no one needed.
Yeah, I was going to say the classic. It's not a classic. It's old. It's not a classic. There's a difference.
There is
people.
A difference.
Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger's foray into festive hijinks. Yeah, let's just get started, shall we? Yeah, so we, interestingly, the title cards list this as being made by 1492 Pictures, so my first note just says, a lot of bad ideas start with 1492. anyway, my next note is that we open with Jake Lloyd, who nerds will remember from The Phantom Menace as the young Darth Vader. He's in this and that, and I think that was the end of his career, pretty much. I think
he said everyone was cross with him for the contents of a film when he was a child that he had absolutely no control over. Seems monumentally unfair.
He was badly cast and isn't a particularly good actor, but there was a lot of blame to go around on The Phantom Menace, and I don't think he deserved much of it. Anyway, we're getting a little bit off topic. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a harried businessman. He works for a mattress company, which is interesting because...
Busy, selling mattresses all the time.
Well, this is the thing, because there's a lot of conspiracy theories around mattress companies. I don't know if you're aware of these.
Go on.
Well, basically, there's like a mattress company, like on every couple of blocks in America, there's a mattress store. And like, how often do you buy a mattress? Well, I don't think I've ever bought a mattress.
Mm.
And a lot of people are like, how are they all in business? And the rumor is that a lot of them are money laundering fronts for other things. So maybe that's why Arnold's busy all the time.
You would have thought if he had mob connections, he wouldn't have such trouble getting hold of things he wants.
That's true, yeah. Just an odd little, much like Kevin McAllister's dad in Home Alone is allegedly working for the mob because they've got this giant house and he can take the whole family. You know, there's a whole...
No, it was just the 90s. Luke.
Oh yeah, boomers just had money.
It was just money and easy credit. Things weren't as expensive.
Oh yeah, it's been nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a harried mattress company executive named Howard Langston, as you pointed out, that classic Austrian name, Howard Langston.
It just does not suit him. You say, oh, this person is Howard Langston, you do not think of Arnold.
No.
He's very low down the list.
He misses a lot of family stuff because he's so busy with his job selling mattresses, allegedly, and including missing his son's karate... I've got karate recycle, is that what you call that? When they,
yeah. Not to their faces,
well,
no.
Yeah, well, you can. They have. I looked at his form, he's terrible. But yeah, well, you know when kids do karate in front of a group of people who aren't interested in it?
That's,
yeah, that. Arnold misses that. He gets caught driving on the hard shoulder in an attempt to make it on time to his son's karate fest. The cop pulls him over, makes him walk down the white line and do the alphabet backwards and all that jazz. Meanwhile, Arnold's neighbour, Ted... puts lights on Arnold's house, and he said he light-cucked him.
He does.
He's being light-cucked when he gets home. Another man is lighting up his house. And
so this guy is distractingly played by the guy...
Phil Hartman, yes, the late Phil Hartman.
Who is the voice of Troy McClure.
Yeah, and Lionel Hutz, attorney
at law. Lionel Hutz. So he's that.
Yeah, he only has that one voice, which is just his natural speaking voice. It's like when Seth MacFarlane talks and he just is Brian. It's quite distracting.
But the intonation and everything is exactly that voice. So Troy McClure is just going to, throughout this movie, just domestically cuck him in all the ways. He takes his biscuits out the oven. He puts his star on his tree.
You might remember me from Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah.
So I'm going to say it's a bit weird for a kids movie.
It is a little bit weird, yeah. In an attempt to make things up to his son, Arnold vows to get him the Turbo Man doll, which is the hottest toy available. His wife points out that she asked him to buy one a couple of weeks back, and he lies and said that he totally did that, when in fact he has forgotten. Arnold says he's nipping back to the office on Christmas Eve, where he's so
safe. Does this all take place on Christmas Eve?
Yeah. It's only a one-day plot, I know.
Weird.
Where he claims he stashed the doll, but he's actually going to make a desperate attempt to find a Turbo Man and be back in time for the Christmas parade. Everybody got that? Good. That's the very simple setup.
I just
setup.
Watched this movie and I didn't fully get that.
Really?
No.
You were on your phone.
I wasn't. I was making notes.
Okay. Whilst queuing for a toy store, Arnold encounters an annoying conspiracy theorist postman played by Sinbad, who is also after a Turbo Man.
Myron
is the character's name, yeah, played by Sinbad, if you remember.
See, now he's paying attention.
If you remember 90s comedians.
I was.
Well done. Jesus. Good to see you letting that go. If you remember 90s comedian Sinbad.
No one does.
I did.
Did you?
Yes. I can't help it if I'm hip and down with the young people from the 90s. Arnold and Sinbad get laughed out of the toy store for asking if there are any Turbo Mans left. Turbo Men? I'm not sure what the pluralization. Arnold threatens an employee into admitting a lady left with the last one. He and Sinbad take turns sabotaging each other in a slapstick fashion, trying to catch up with her, which they eventually do not. We then get a montage of toy stores of Arnold failing to get a Turbo Man doll. Meanwhile, Arnold's neighbor, Ted, is helping Arnold's wife make cookies. Arnold rings home to learn that the neighbor is there, which stokes his resentment. Arnold runs into Sinbad again, and Sinbad proposes teaming up. Arnold says that he wants to do this on his own, which angers Sinbad, but then somebody mentions that Toy World has taken a late delivery of Turbo Mans, and in his haste, Arnold reverses his car into the bike belonging to the same cop who pulled him over the night before.
Uh-oh.
Oh, this cop's not going to be happy. At the, as you pointed out, still functioning mall. This is a 90s mall, so it's bustling.
Oh, it made me a bit sad.
Yeah, there's not a single empty storefront or Poundland or anything. It's buzzing. Anyway, at the still functional mall, a lottery system is imposed where everybody's going to get a ball in the hopes of winning one of the very few Turbo Mans that are left. This leads to a fight over lotto balls. Sinbad maces Arnold and steals his. Arnold tells the mob that Sinbad has spare balls, leading them to turn on him and start attacking him. And Sinbad invokes Rodney King at this point, which is a little bit... Yeah.
I don't think we're ready to laugh about that now.
No.
I'm going to say it's not funny.
No.
And it was much closer then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good that America was apparently ready to laugh about
about police brutality towards unarmed black men.
Yeah, unarmed black guys getting beaten up. Thank God they fixed that problem. It hasn't flared up again in the intervening years. Jesus wept.
Happy Christmas.
There's a long slapstick sequence of Arnold trying to catch a bouncing lottery ball that's getting away from him.
Classic 90s. Do, 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 do,
yeah.
Do,
oh, it's gone over the balcony. It's going to jump over the thing and knock over the stuff. And yeah, you get the idea.
I feel like there's only one person that did the score for all of these movies.
Yes.
It's exactly the same
score. It might even be the same score. You'd never notice.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. This ends with him trying to bargain with a child to get the ball back, and he gets set upon as a paedophile, which is also not really funny, but it's better than the Rodney King stuff. A dejected Arnold encounters a crooked Santa selling black market Turbo Men, and drives with him to an underground Santa warehouse where the Santas are smuggling
toys. My favourite bit of the whole movie.
This is an interesting idea, actually. Yeah, I kind of like this. Santa tries to fob Arnold off with a knockoff Santa, and a fight breaks out. We then get Nunchuck Santa, Giant Santa, Vern Troyer from Austin Powers crops up as a tiny Santa's helper, and he gets punched. As an elf, and he gets punched across. I believe they prefer the term dwarf. Thank you. He gets punched across the room by the Big Show. The wrestler who plays the giant Santa in this. Yeah, fun fact. The police then raid the place and break up the fight, and Arnold bluffs his way out with a toy police badge that he's nicked from a crate.
The cleverest bit in the whole movie.
Yeah, that is quite clever, yeah. Driving home dejected, Arnold's car runs out of gas and he pushes it as far as a diner. He calls home to find that his wife is next door petting Ted, which is the name of Ted the neighbor's pet reindeer, his son named it after his dad. So there's a reindeer named Ted. Mom's next door petting
Ted. He's dicking
Ted.
Your wife!
Yeah, yeah. Arnold gets into an argument with his son over his absence and hangs up the payphone to realise that Sinbad, who also failed to get a Turbo Man, is now in the diner. The two commiserate about the difficulties of fatherhood. Sinbad says the reason he grew up to be a loser is that his dad didn't get him the toy that he wanted on Christmas, and Arnold vows not to let his son grow up to be the same sort of loser.
It's definitely what happens.
Yeah, capitalism.
It's such a reach.
Yeah, it really is. The radio announces a Turbo Man giveaway, and the two begin fighting over the phone before the diner owner informs them that the radio station is just two blocks down. Arnold and Sinbad race to the station, and Arnold bursts into the studio, followed by Sinbad, who claims he has a bomb, which is just a random package.
And the DJ's Mr. Belding.
Yeah.
From Saved by the Bell, 90s kids.
Nobody remembers, apparently.
Everyone remembers Saved by the Bell, Luke.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, Sinbad claims he has a bomb, which is just a random package from his bag. When they realise this, they start fighting again, and the DJ admits that he doesn't have a Turbo Man, only a voucher for one when they come in. The police arrive because there's been a break-in at the radio station, and Sinbad claims that another package is a bomb, convincing the police to lower their guns while he and Arnold escape separately. The policeman, who has been Arnold's nemesis so far, decides to open the bomb because he used to work on the bomb squad, and it actually does blow up, to even Sinbad's surprise. But nobody is hurt. He just ends up in that...
He's totally fine.
Yeah, he ends up with that sort of Black and Wily Coyote thing where, like, his hair's standing on end and he's charred, but everybody's completely fine from this bomb that went off.
I'm going to say, after the Bad Santa Warehouse, there is a tipping point where this movie goes absolutely off a cliff.
Yeah, somewhere around here, I think.
It does it plot-wise, and it also does it with the reality of the world. So up until now, we've been in a world that is largely our world with a slightly slapstick edge, you know, but now, cartoon.
Yeah.
Cartoon rules will apply.
Yeah, it gets more cartoonish as it runs out of good ideas, basically. Yeah. Arnold arrives home to see that Ted is putting the star on his family tree. Enraged, Arnold remembers that Ted mentioned that his own son's Turbo Man is under their tree, and he breaks into Ted's house to steal it. He has a change of heart whilst trying to sneak out, but is attacked by Ted the reindeer, leading to a fight in which he sets Ted's house on fire. Ted and Arnold's wife arrive, and his wife says she's tired of his lies and that she's going to the parade with Ted. Which is a very sort of, ironically for Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's like those Charles Atlas comics you used to get about, you know, like, oh, your girlfriend leaves you at the beach for more of a man, and she's going to the dance with Ted instead of, it's got that sort of tonality to it. Anyway. The reindeer returns and Arnold punches it out. No notes. I'm happy to have films where people punch livestock.
The reindeer is being quite aggressive.
The reindeer is being a dick. As Arnie and the reindeer have a reconciliation beer in the garden, Arnold decides he still needs to go to the parade for his son's sake. Arnold arrives in time to see Ted make a move on his wife, which she rebuffs, but in an attempt to charge in to intervene, he runs into the police nemesis and spills his coffee all over him.
Yeah!
Arnold
all
hides...
over his bandages!
Yeah, well, no, all over his hands, which I think were okay. But then later, the police officer is bandaged. Is he bandaged because he burnt his hands?
I'm assuming because he was holding a bomb.
It's not made clear. I thought he had his hands bandaged in a minute because he burnt his hands on the coffee, but was fine from the bomb that went off while
his
he was...
Hands, no, because the coffee goes on the hands, on the bandages, and he goes, ah!
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. Arnold hides in a staging area for the parade to try and hide from the police, where he is mistaken for the stuntman who's going to play Turbo Man in the parade, and he's strapped into a jetpack and sent out on a float. An announcement is made that Turbo Man will pick a kid to win a deluxe Turbo Man figure. He picks his son, obviously, who doesn't notice that Turbo Man is his Austrian father. Bit of a reach.
I mean, he's only got his face and voice.
Yeah. As a stage bit, Turbo Man's enemy Dementor is going to attack the float, but Sinbad steals the costume from the actor in order to board the float and steals the Turbo Man figure.
Sigh.
Turbo Arnold beats him up and his son escapes with the toy while Arnold is busy with Dementor's minions. Sinbad / Dementor chases the son onto a roof, meaning Arnold must do a prolonged slapstick jetpack bit to rescue him. This goes on for a while. Sinbad steals the doll but is immediately surrounded by the police while Arnold saves his son and reveals that he is in fact Turbo Man. It was your dad all along. The police give the son the Turbo Man doll, and the cop with the that's been Arnold's nemesis is surprised to realise that he's Turbo Man, and all is forgiven. Arnold's son gives the Turbo Man to Sinbad for his son, who will presumably take it as consolation for being one more black kid with a father in prison. The end. This is it's. It's got some problematic stuff, which I think again in the 90s we were just better at ignoring the racial problems in America. I think it, just as an aside, it's nice that this is all really uncomfortable now. Like, I don't like seeing Sinbad get surrounded by police with their guns drawn. I immediately get tense when that happens.
Well, it's interesting. They sort of put it in as a joke, but, like, it's really, really not a joke. It never has been. So.
But I think it's kind of a good sign that we are now uncomfortable about this and talking about this and all very aware of it as a problem. Whereas in the 90s, this was just considered fine and nobody thought that was weird or scary. So yeah. That's maybe a sign of some progress in society. I might have gone off track somewhat from Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger here.
No. I mean, he brought up Rodney King, to be
fair.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for that synopsis. That's excellent synopsis. I like quite a lot of things about this movie. I liked it more than I was expecting to.
Yeah, I did. Everybody's really trying their best, I have to say that, which, like, unlike a lot of the fucking Hallmark, you know, we just did Falling for Christmas with Lindsay Lohan and all that shit, all those films, like, everyone's phoning it in, they're nearly texting it in, whereas this, everyone is trying.
I dispute that a bit. I think some actors always work really hard. But everybody in this movie is trying with what they've got. I enjoy this 90s genre that we had of parents being shit.
Yeah.
We see it in a lot of films. Home Alone, the parents and Mrs. Doubtfire are divorced and, like, not okay. Mermaids, she's a terrible mum. E.T., they're, like, fighting and stuff. It seemed to be that in the 90s we had these family films. We had films in general that had this, but also family films where families were often squabbling or just failing or kind of putting work before their kids and stuff. And that was, like, acknowledged. That feels realistic. And it feels like a thing we don't see anymore.
Yeah, I think you're probably... maybe we just don't watch family films anymore. Maybe that's happening all over the place. I wouldn't know.
I feel like they've got more sanitized. I think they feel like they've got some of their edges taken off them.
Maybe this was the baby boom generation working through their respective divorces in the 90s, right? Whereas, like, as that generation started getting divorced, we had to have it on screen because it felt more real to people.
Yeah.
But then, like, our generation being the children of those people, we tended to realize that divorce was more of an option. I think we have healthier relationships in general than our parents had. So maybe that we have more relationships that are actually...
Also, they're still completely controlling most of culture.
So. There is that, yes. Yeah.
We just like this genre of movies where it can be a family-friendly film, everything's going to be okay in the end, but maybe your parents are divorced or things aren't, or they're a bit neglectful, or they stay at work too long. You know, parents being imperfect, I think, is enormously helpful for everybody to be able to have in movies.
In fairness, the studio tried about 5 different endings in Mrs. Doubtfire where they get back together and none of them work. They had to do the divorce endings.
Of course
it
they
wouldn't
do.
Make any fucking sense in that film.
And that's why really moving. Yeah. And, like, for me, being a kid who had parents going through a divorce, that was very comforting.
Yeah.
My dad's drag was terrible.
But... yeah, you knew it was straight away. It was the beer.
So I like that about this. It's got a lot of really nice characterful stuff.
Yeah.
I particularly enjoy, I've got written down here, Backdoor Santa, which is one of our favourite Christmas songs.
It is.
We'll put it in the notes. This whole, like, the bad Santa grotto warehouse thing is really
good. Yeah,
the
Black Market Santas are good.
Santas are good. Ted being a cucklord is quite interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Even Arnold's secretary at the beginning is quite characterful. So they've got that lovely, like, all these people. And even the guy who is like the stage manager shoveling Arnold into this Turbo Man suit and like doing his spiel. Even he's quite funny.
He's got some good lines.
So I enjoy that, like, level of detail and humour is really, really nice. It actually made me laugh out loud a couple of times.
A couple of things did amuse me,
So it has got some witty dialogue.
And I quite like seeing Arnold doing goofy as well. He's not like he can't act, but he can do, like, goofy shtick. Arnie doing shtick is inherently funny because he's so po-faced and serious normally, but I kind of like seeing him do that.
Yeah, he's good. And he can do funny. I mean, he had a whole career doing, like, he did Twins, he did Kindergarten Cop, he did all that stuff. So it does tend to rely overly on bad slapstick that is not, largely not inventively good. I think slapstick for me is only funny when it's really unexpectedly clever, like in a sort of Buster Keaton vein of you really don't see it coming. That's when it makes me laugh, not when I completely see it coming and then it happens.
Yeah.
But it does have some good bits of dialogue. The running gag with the police officer is clever, threaded all the way through the same police officer. It's basic, but it's good.
It's a good idea. I don't think they do it very well, but it's a good... There's something there, again, that
I know,
can
but
be...
I was being positive about this movie. Okay. And obviously, as a, you know, a child of the 90s, I enjoy the nostalgia of watching something set in the 90s and how affluent everything is.
Everything was still functional. And in the parade, there's somebody dressed as the 90s cartoon version of the Tick. Always a fan of the Tick as a character.
Yeah.
And,
okay. So I get on to my problems with this.
How long you got?
Okay. Yeah. Number one, this is a really fucking weird subject for a movie, right?
Yeah.
So a family movie. So the central conceit is, if you had to sum it up in a log line, so one line that sells what this movie is about.
Yeah.
A father struggles to get a much sought after toy for his son on Christmas Eve. Right, that's it. It's the premise is so thin for a movie.
I mean, it's a good slapstick premise, but then like you have to remember that slapstick stuff was originally they were shorts, right? Like you'd have like a Three Stooges short, or like Bugs Bunny. Even it's 5-10 minutes. And that's,
exactly. So this is my problem. One is that this isn't enough meat for a movie.
Yeah.
Now some movies, I kept thinking about Deck the Halls.
Yeah.
In which case, I think we should just mention, just in case we haven't mentioned it recently, Matthew Broderick killed two women.
He did kill two women, but he paid £100 for it. So that's water under the bridge.
The Christmas movie with Matthew Broderick and Danny DeVito in it. Now again, a very thin premise. Yeah. Basically, two neighbours are competing to have the best Christmas lights.
Yeah.
But even though that sounds like, oh, they're both the same thin idea, they're not. Because the second idea of these neighbours competing, it unfurls a load of stuff. You know that there's going to be rivalry. There's probably going to be sabotage.
Yeah.
There's going to be an escalation. It's a battle when you've got two sides that are competing for a thing. It's going to have to reach some sort of apex.
Yeah.
Final boss battle.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way jokes work, right? So you got to get stupider and it's got to get more overblown and it gets...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what we would refer to this in sort of writing terms is the story engine.
Yeah.
Or John York will call it the natural story, right?
Yeah.
So it tells you, you know what's going to happen based off this thing because there's enough conflict embedded in the idea.
Yeah.
But a man just trying to go to find something in a shop is not enough of an idea because you just go, well, okay, he can't find it in that shop. What does he do?
Goes to another shop.
He goes to a different shop and then Luke just goes to another shop.
Yeah.
And then either he gets it or he doesn't. And what they try and they have some good ideas, but they need to flesh this. They need to escalate this premise far more and to give it a lot more heft because it's too thin and you feel it run out of steam.
Yeah.
I think after the warehouse, that's about the 30 minute mark.
Yeah.
This film's done. We've basically done most of everything that we can do with this idea and they don't really seem to have anything else to do with it. The second, and you can feel how much they're straining at this idea because, like you say, it goes increasingly cartoonishly outlandish.
Yeah.
Like the bomb threat and everything is what comes next.
Well, the cartoon bomb and then, a
long jetpack scene where he's literally becomes a cartoon character.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they then attempt to artificially jack up the stakes by like, well, the thing is, though, you might think, oh, this is quite a rich child in an affluent suburb with two loving parents. And maybe if he doesn't get the exact toy he wants, that everything would be fine.
Yeah.
But no, his whole future's in jeopardy if he doesn't get this toy. You're like, really, bitch?
Yeah.
If this is the most significant wound you receive as a child,
again,
you've won the fucking trauma Olympics of childhood.
This is the downside of the 90s. Like, yes, everybody was rich and everything worked, but like just the capitalism was being hammered into you. Like,
my God.
Yeah.
Like, if that kid is on a therapist couch saying, well, one time...
I never got my Turbo Man
My doll. Very loving father, who was overworked, managed to... Didn't get me this sold-out toy.
Yeah.
I would... I think any therapist worth their salt would kick him out.
Yeah, that's right. If you are a therapist, you are allowed to slap somebody if they say that.
Okay, so the premise is far too thin. And also, it leaves us with a weird thing as a family movie because the main character, the person we're following all the way through this and their trials and tribulations is Arnold Schwarzenegger. So if you're a child, you're watching Arnold Schwarzenegger try and fail to shop.
Yeah. When you do that as the elevator pitch, it's not a winner.
I'm going to say, that's not what he's for.
No, again, he is a large part of the problem with this. And, I have a lot of goodwill towards Arnold as a child of the 90s myself.
As a kid, you've got some kind of, they throw in quite a lot of slapstick. So like, I, as a child watching this, you're like, oh, kind of, there's some slapstick, that's okay. But Arnold's your main character, which is a bit of a weird, this like parental dad thing is difficult to relate to. The whole cuckolding subplot, I'm hoping is going to be lost on most children.
Yeah.
And then if you're not a child watching this, if you're an adult watching this, do you want to watch this as a parent?
Yeah.
Like, who is this for? It's such a weirdly targeted family movie. And it's what it is they've just taken something out of the headlines and gone, that would be a fun Christmas movie. And it's not.
Yeah, it feels a little bit focus grouped, right? Like you're trying to get everybody on side with this. So you got to have something it is a weird one. I had a note that just... Are you still doing flaws?
I got flaws to go, Luke.
Okay. I came up with a fix just now.
Oh, okay. Can we hold the fixes?
Yeah, we'll hold the fixes.
Now, you touched on this, which is Arnold is the wrong casting for this part. He is misused in this part. Now, it feels like obviously he was huge in the 90s.
Yeah.
He's still huge now. And that's why they've got him. But the problem that gives us is that he is... His character arc, where it should be, there isn't really one, is that... he's too powerful and he's too alpha a presence to be put in these situations where he's fighting. Now imagine Luke, 90s favourite Rick Moranis.
I knew you were going to say that. That's actually not bad. Yeah.
But if he was much, much more of an underdog.
Yeah.
So when there's a huge mob of people, he's not going to punch someone out. He's going to get trampled. And like when he's confronted with a giant police officer, he's going to be on his back foot. Arnold looks always very easily competent in every situation that he's put into, which undermines the peril of the situation. And then it also means that by the end, when he has become Turbo Man, which is a nice twist to have on this movie, searching for the Turbo Man doll, he ends up being Turbo Man.
Yeah.
But imagine if that was, you know, it's all a suit and it's all smoke and mirrors and it's the little guy.
Somebody, every man becoming Turbo Man is a becoming, whereas Arnold is the guy you cast as Turbo Man in the first
place. Exactly, and that is why they've got him. It feels like we wanted to have this thing where, oh, he accidentally, and then this goes on to my next point, which is that the finale is an accident.
Yeah.
The whole last part where he becomes Turbo Man, he totally does it by accident. He doesn't go, oh, I know what I can do. I've totally fucked up as a grand gesture to my child, I'm gonna like find a way to become Turbo Man in the parade because I failed to do everything else, and I'm gonna do this big declaration act of love for my son. He doesn't do that. He completely stumbles into it.
You're right, that's not earned at that point.
It's not earned at all. So the whole of the finale doesn't work. Final point five, and then I will let you go on. They absolutely do Myron dirty in this movie.
Yeah, it's, well, this actually leads into where I was going with this, because like, you can't, there's not really a bad guy in this movie, which makes it more, because like, you feel a lot of sympathy for Myron, for Sinbad's character through most of this. So it's like, you can't, so you're not really okay with him getting injured, which is what made me think of like, you know, when they're sort of, you don't believe that Arnold can be physically hurt at any point, right? So then, like, when he's, like, being knocked over and tripping on things and hitting his head and stuff, that doesn't really do anything.
No.
And then, like, if you're doing that to Sinbad's character, you just kind of feel bad for him already, so that's also not funny.
Yeah.
And it made me think of Home Alone, that, like, the reason it's okay to do, like, horrendous injuries to Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern in that is because they're burglars, they're bad guys, right?
Yeah.
So a better idea for a film, if you're going to have fighting over toys, is burglars fighting over stolen toys in the first place, because then they're already bad, and then whatever slapstick mayhem they do to each other is okay because they're bad people, and that's, you're kind of into that.
I guess so, yeah. I think, I mean, they've kind of got Ted as the bad guy, but, you know, again, that's centred very much around Arnold and the mother. It doesn't sort of, like, come into the toy thing.
It's nothing to do with Turbo Man,
No, it doesn't. They can't make up their mind about Myron.
Yeah.
Because at the one hand, he seems like he's going to be a comedy sidekick.
Yeah.
And then, but then he becomes who he's actually literally fighting at the end.
He becomes
the supervillain.
The actual cartoon bad guy.
He's not
a
supervillain at any point.
No.
It's really, really weird.
But then he also does, like, fake, well, he, as it turns out, he does bomb the police. No, but he does, like, say, I've got a bomb, gives the police, and then it blows up, and they take him away at the end. He's going down for a long, long time.
They can't decide what to do with him, and so they keep having him pop up all the time, and they never really work out what the relationship is between Arnold and Howard and Myron. And I think this is, like, epitomised by the ending, where Howard, the main character, the Arnold character, has won.
Yeah.
He is dressed as Turbo Man. He's got a Turbo Man for his son. His son is looking at him like a hero.
Yeah.
His wife is looking at him like a hero. He's vanquished the cut guy. And Myron is being led away in handcuffs, and he just doesn't react.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know, nobody knows what his character thinks about this at this point. So they just haven't done anything. He doesn't go, oh my God, like, we've been on this journey together. Myron's a good guy. You can't do that to him. And then it ends up being Arnold's son who does a gesture to help him. But at no point does Arnold step into the police and go, hey, let's just...
Oh, it was all part of the parade thing. Don't worry, this was all
the
staged.
The bomb thing was an accident. And it's a bit more uncomfortable when Arnold has got away with also being involved in the bomb thing, that, like, literally speeding, smashing up the police officer's thing, assaulting a police officer, and he's getting to be a hero.
Yeah, and the black guy's getting taken away.
Yes, Luke.
Yeah, it's not
great,
really
right.
You guys.
It's not right. Okay, I do have some fixes. Okay. Suggestions. So, my number one suggestion.
I didn't know this was where Jingle All the Way was going, so it's going to be
neither
a savage indictment of racial injustice in America.
You need to recast this.
Yes. I've got a lot of goodwill for Arnold, but he can't act. Like,
he can't act.
He has no range. And there's a reason that his most successful role is the emotionless robot in The Terminator, right? Because that's what he's good for.
I will counter that. Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, you're alone there.
I love Kindergarten Cop.
I know you do.
And I'm not alone. People out there are going to be nodding their heads right now going, yes, B is right. Who is your daddy and what does he do?
I think his best film is Predator, but I think his most iconic role and most successful is as the Terminator. And
we should watch Twins. Do you want to watch Twins?
I think we should finish this podcast. We're in the middle of recording right
okay,
now.
Okay, all right, fine. This needs to be either, I mean, I would say Rick Moranis. I don't know what's... I love Rick Moranis. Where are you, Rick Moranis? Or Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks would be very good.
Tom Hanks would be great.
Yeah, you need somebody every man and unremarkable.
Yes,
yeah.
And he needs to be every man and unremarkable. One, so that when he is faced with challenges, particularly physical challenges, it's not obvious that he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
So you're more worried about him the more sort of physically diminutive he
Actually,
is.
Actually, you know what? Swap the casting. Have Phil Hartman as the main guy and Arnold as the neighbour that's trying to cook him. That's a much more sensible.
That'd be much better. That'd be much better. If you have someone who is less... imposing, massive, sort of alpha male, macho guy, it's easier for that character to get away with doing more sort of underhanded things. If you have someone who's more like Tom Hanks and they do something naughty, like, you know, sneaking in to steal the Christmas tree, it's sneaking in to like steal the toy from under the tree and they like set the house on fire.
Yeah.
Like, even though obviously Arnold is like, oh, I didn't mean to, but you feel like Tom Hanks could kind of set your Christmas tree on fire and you'd be like, oh, Tom Hanks though.
Yeah.
He didn't mean to. He's so charming.
And I was even thinking, like, you could even have gotten away at this point in history, not anymore, with Hulk Hogan, who was doing a lot of like family movies in the 90s, because he looks big and dumb, right? So like, he's got a blundering quality that Arnold doesn't have.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, like, you could have gone in that direction with it.
You need someone who is sort of seems bumbling and seems sweet.
Yeah.
And seems a bit a real underdog, someone who is completely outmatched to the task that they are being faced with, and then we'll be more on side with them. So we need to change the casting. The adventure is far too small.
Yeah.
It takes place over... I mean, the time frame being that small is fine, you know, but it seems to take place basically in about 5 mile radius of his house.
Yeah.
And I think that you need to have a much bigger adventure. I think he needs to, like, be so desperate that he finds out that there are, you know... that they've released them in Ohio, and he gets on a fucking plane and he ends up in the middle of nowhere.
Like, maybe he's got a week before Christmas and he's away on a business trip, but realizes he's got to use that week to track down a Turbo Man.
Yeah, and he ends up in Japan and Australia and stuff. I think you've got to make this feel expansive and feel like it is worth having a budget this big and having a... having this much of a time frame for it being a movie. And so I also think what you also need to... concurrently with that is up the emotional stakes of this. So I think you can make him more of a deadbeat dad or more of a dad who is struggling. So either he's really struggling financially, which is why he's working so many hours, or maybe they have just got a divorce and he doesn't get to see his kid as much as he wants to. And, you know, maybe she does have a new boyfriend who is getting to be in his house all the time. I still think that theme is slightly too adult for children's
films.
But I think that ultimately, you need to... They've got this recurring theme of breaking promises. You always break your promises.
Yeah.
But it feels like the relationship between the father and son in this movie is really, really, really strong.
Yeah, it feels fine.
It feels fine. And it doesn't feel... It feels like if he said, look, I tried really hard to get you this toy and I fucked up, the kid would have a tantrum for a small amount of time and then be fine.
Yeah, and then be in the Phantom Menace and never be heard from again. So, you know, it's fine. He had like 3 years and then he was gone.
So the stakes don't feel high enough. It doesn't feel like he's going to lose his family if he doesn't find this. Doesn't feel like he's going to lose his son forever. This isn't his last chance to have a Christmas with his son before they move. Like, they've split up, she's moving back to England or something, and he's not going to get to spend Christmas with his son
again. Well, like you say, from the lens that we are now looking at it through, as the country is freezing to death and starving and can't get an ambulance, it feels very difficult to care about the 90s when you couldn't get the in doll that Christmas. It's a very hard sell to a modern audience.
I mean, I was thinking about it in terms of just in the 90s. I still think all of this stuff applies. Obviously it's got worse since then. And I think you could do a really fucking good update of this movie with someone who is on working 0 hours contracts, who is desperately trying to make ends meet and get stuff for their kids at Christmas. So you think you could do something that is both really heartbreaking and really sweet and funny. You could do a great update of this. But this idea about him failing as a father, it needs to be much stronger. And then also, if he's going to transform into being this hero at the end, maybe perhaps realising he was the kid's hero all along, he needs to be less of a hero to begin with. Arnold is already very heroic as he comes in.
The casting is the biggest problem with this. And again, he's trying
hard. The premise is the biggest problem.
But aside from the premise, the casting, the acting, the special effects, the aqueduct, the viniculture.
I also think that they are missing an opportunity by not just changing Myron into a sidekick.
Yeah.
Just have Myron as a sidekick, as a comedy foil. Yeah. It works perfectly well. God knows Arnold needs it. But, you know, it's always helpful to have a sidekick in a movie so you've got things, someone to go through stuff with. And maybe at the end, he gives Myron, he gets the toy, but he gives it to Myron because Myron needs it more for his son.
Yeah, that's nice. And also, again, have an actual bad guy. If Myron's going to be the sidekick, have someone who's actually nefarious that we can really root for and want him to get, like, blown up and, you know, push that window and stuff.
Yeah, or we just, maybe it's just circumstances, the antagonist, right? It's just a series of obstacles that they've got to overcome all the time. And then the antagonist is, yeah, I mean, I guess the mum's boyfriend at home, but we don't necessarily need a person to be the antagonist all the time. Or you could have a horrible boss, right? Who's constantly putting pressure on him to go to work and...
Yeah, you want somebody like... something like Ed O'Neill from Married with Children. Again, he's got that very Married with Children vibe because, like, Al Bundy is a fucking loser and does a lot of slapstick stuff in that show because, like, again, circumstance, like, God hates him, you know? And his marriage is awful and he hates his family and life is terrible for him. And that's kind of the character that you want to be going through this. And it can, you know, there's an episode of that where it's Christmas and he hasn't managed to get anything and he ends up in a bar somewhere and ends up getting in a bar fight with the owner and then steals everything from the bar and that's the presents that he gets. His family's like, it's a TV with a mounting bracket come off the wall still and it's things like that, you know. Yeah, you need to be more cynical about it, I think. Again, you need to pick a tone. Like, if it's going to be slapstick is a very difficult tone to sustain for 90 minutes, like you say. Yeah. So you need to decide what is this about other than commercialism.
It seems that we're very, very close to it, right, in that a father who feels that he's worried about his relationship with his son.
Yeah.
It feels like he's failing as a dad, which is, from what I hear from parents, what loads of parents feel like all the time. And particularly if you're working lots of hours and stuff like that. That he feels that the way that he's going to be a good dad is to get this toy. That's why it's important, because he's desperate. It's not about the toy. It's about being a good dad. And then he realizes that actually all his son wants is to spend time with him.
Yeah.
That is the arc that we think we should have. That is a very Christmassy arc. It's a very moral arc that, you know, and it's a nice twist if he does end up dressed up as the hero. He is the hero after all that his kid wanted.
Well, maybe he thinks about doing that as a stopgap solution. If he can't get the toy, he's going to turn up as Turbo Man and try and go to a fancy dress shop and gets the costume that way, and that's why he ends up in the parade, because then he's tried to do something that's more organic.
And again, I mean, this is a technical writing thing really, or storytelling thing. He has to drive the action. Yes. He has to be deliberately making those choices.
Disco is awake and also just wants our attention this Christmas. Good girl.
So I think my simple fix for this is have that as the arc.
Yeah.
Make it a much more emotionally tense situation where you really understand why he's desperate to reconnect with his son. And then the first half of the movie, he is trying to get the toy.
Yeah.
In the middle, he gets it. He's got the Turbo Man toy, but he's now fucking miles from home. He's in Singapore or something. Yeah. And now the whole second half of the movie is him realising, oh my God, I've got this thing to make the perfect Christmas, but I'm going to miss Christmas. Yeah. I won't be back in time. And then the whole second half is a race to get back in time for Christmas.
Yeah, that gives it some legs.
Gives it some push, a clock. It gives it stakes. And then, you know, on the way, maybe he has to let go of the toy. He has to pawn it to get a ride, and he realizes, and he comes back thinking he's a failure, but, you know, obviously along this journey realizes that his son just wanted him to be there for Christmas. That's all he wanted.
We've got to stop your musical interludes.
I'm doing the soundtrack. Uh-huh. So that is how I would fix. It's a very fixable film. I think the premise is really thin, but I think you can do interesting things with it.
Well, it's half a premise, like you say. It's the start of a good idea. Yeah. And they just greenlit that.
They did.
Yeah, okay. And we got Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, that'll be a movie.
I mean, if you're younger than us, you might not remember this kind of toy of the year craze, which happened all through the 90s. So you said it started with the Cabbage Patch Dolls.
Yes, and then this film came out in 96, which was the same year that Tickle Me Elmo was.
Yeah, and before that we had Buzz Lightyear.
Buzz Lightyear was a big thing, yeah.
So there would be
the
this...
Furbies were a thing.
Every year there was a must-have toy, and that, you know, parents would be queuing outside for weeks to get the toys. They would always sell out. They'd be like footage on the news of people having fist fights in Toys R Us to try and get hold of them. So this was a cultural moment that we don't quite have in the same way anymore, but you could still have it that, you know, that premise of trying to get a special present, it could, rather than it being the must have, it could just be something that's really, really rare and special.
Well, I mean, slightly slightly tangential thought, but just the genius of the Fortnite people. That Fortnite is like free to download, so everyone's got it, and then you just have to pay to get more and more stuff in the game. So there's no one thing that you buy for your kids anymore. You just buy them an endless series of things for the one game that's free, right? That's such an insidious and brilliant move by whoever came up with that. So that's why we don't have that anymore, because kids don't want a thing.
Or you could have them
the latest skins in Fortnite or the
We've just been watching Dead Pixels, which is an enormously underrated series. It's absolutely brilliant. It is on. Is available on the 4 Player.
Channel 4 Player.
And in that, so it's a sitcom about gamers who spend their lives in. It's called
Kingdom Quest.
Kingdom Scrolls.
Kingdom Scrolls. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's World of Warcraft, but it's not.
It's a fantasy role play game. Yeah. But what if the what they have to get is you know, this kid wants this amazing thing that's in whatever Kingdom Scrolls type thing, and the dad has to go in and battle, literally do a quest as an avatar because he can't afford it.
Yeah.
To, like, win, and then you follow a virtual quest of this father.
That's an interesting way of doing it. Or even have him do it, like, you could even do it, have a VR section, right, where he's like trying to battle in a VR suit, but then really getting hurt because it's actually doing. Yeah, there's something in there. Yeah, there's a lot of places you could go with this, and it didn't, I think, is the problem.
But it did take us to some uncomfortable racial places.
Oh, well. God bless us, everyone.
So that was Jingle All the Way.
Yeah.
We're not quite sure how many Christmas episodes we're going to do. We're going to try and do a couple more.
Yeah, we appreciate that we're coming up to that period where people have got very little to do and have to drive a lot. So people are, it's podcasting season.
It is. Tis the season.
And there's no shortage of god awful Christmas films to watch. So we're just going to bang a few out at the moment. And we're a little bit behind anyway. So we're just going to pop a few out and see what we do.
Well, we hope you have enjoyed that. If you have a Christmas movie you would like us to do, you can get in touch with us by messaging us at Arts Hot. I've lost all my words because disco hole, is
trying to lick your face. artsholepodcast@gmail.com if you'd like to email us. We are at artsholepod on Twitter, as long as Twitter is still a thing.
And we have Patreon, patreon.com/theartshole. If you are a patron, we are putting a very special gift for you in the actual post.
So
you'll probably get it in about 6 months time.
Yeah, that's also going to hell these days. Yeah, we were looking at doing White Christmas maybe, which felt like too much of a slog, so we ended up doing Jingle All the Way today. But yeah, maybe we'll do White Christmas, maybe we'll do a lot of things, who knows. Sorry, I just like to finish my conversations as a mob informant. Forget about it.
Happy Christmas.